What's up, dirtbags? Welcome to episode 261 of the Midwest Angler Podcast. I'm Scott Sturman, and I'm joined, as always, by my buddy Matt Deitch. What's happening, man?
Oh, not much. Had to ump my first middle school softball of the season, so...
That's a sure sign of spring.
Yeah, it is, and it's a sure sign of some bruises tomorrow morning, too. I think I took a couple off the hands, a couple off of... you know, the arms, so... Well,
that's what you get for calling them strikes. Those were balls.
Yeah, I guess.
Yep. No, like I said, that's a sure sign of spring. And today, a day that being outside made you feel like it was spring.
It did. It felt a lot nicer. It wasn't blowing, you know, 50 miles an hour or 30 miles per hour. We weren't having to stay inside to protect ourselves from the eclipse.
The eclipse. How did I forget about talking about the eclipse?
Because it really didn't happen here. So
yeah, that I'll be honest. Like that was a letdown for me. I had read a little bit online, and they had talked about how it would really get dark, and you know, maybe you know, some animals that, you know, kind of come out. You know, late in the evening would, you know, maybe start moving, the frogs
everything would have had rabies.
Yeah, right.
Everybody would be like, oh my gosh, yep. There's a raccoon out.
Like in my mind, I was just like, I couldn't wait for 157. That was when it was supposed to be the peak here, you know, because I'm thinking, man, it's really going to get dark. And then on top of that, it was already cloudy. Right. So it's like, oh man, this is going to be cool, whatever. And honestly, like it got to be like 155 and I'm like, man, unless she like really speeds up here, like this is going to be a great letdown. And next thing you know, it's 158 and it's like, okay. All right, well, yeah, I guess I'll keep packing boxes.
I don't think we were really right in the, we weren't in the path, no, really, no, even close, no, to it. So
no, but I just expected it to kind of get dark. I think we were at like 71% coverage or something like that. Right. So
yeah, I don't know.
Whatever.
They didn't even let the kids go outside in the afternoon for recess. I don't know. Like, they're afraid that they're going to look up at it. Don't look it directly at the sun. I was like, well, isn't that something that you're not supposed to do every day, not just on an eclipse? You're not really supposed to stare at the sun. And guess what? If little Johnny is going to stare at the sun during the eclipse, he's going to stare at the sun if it's not an eclipse. So,
and as long as you don't tell them about it, none of them know, well, that's right, know what the heck to be looking, yeah, at.
That's
so
that's just the power of the media. I mean, working people up in a frenzy. There was even some kids that didn't even come to school because of it.
Really?
And I would have used that excuse. I would have tried to use that excuse, I guess.
Yeah. Ramrod came to work, so that was miraculous.
That was even more, like, that was even, like, crazier than an eclipse.
Probably afraid to stay home.
In case, probably the last eclipse was 2017, so it was probably about, like, yeah... I had a Ramrod sighting at work.
2017, so. Ramrod was 4. Yeah, but all right. Episode 261 is brought to you by our friends over at Dakota Angler in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. You've heard us talk about it before, but they are truly a mom-and-pop bait shop with a big store selection right now. They've got Blackfish and Striker UPF gear in stock on the shelves. You know, like Matt and I were just talking about, the sun's starting to come out. I've been burned something fierce early on in the year. You know, the first times that we've been out,
right.
I think, you know, your skin is not used to being out in the sun, and man, some of those early mornings, like you get done in the back of your neck and your arms and whatnot, just crazy burns. So get some of that, Blackfish or Striker UPF stuff. It's nice and cool to wear. You know, it doesn't look stupid, and you know, makes you feel good and protects you from the sun, because that's no joke.
Right. I actually wear it to school quite often if I'm going to be outside.
Yeah.
I actually had some on a while back. I wore one of my Blackfish shirts, and everybody's kind of commenting about, like, that's my shirt. Like, where'd you get that? And stuff like that. So, like you said, it's the sun anymore, guys, is nothing to joke about, like, when you're out there fishing. So stop in there to Dakota Angler and check out all their lineup of sun protecting gear. I mean, not just shirts, they have, you know, there's hats, there's gloves and everything like that.
Yep.
Just recently I saw there was a couple professional anglers that had to like get some skin spots removed and everything like that. So like I said, you know, it's nothing to joke about. So stop in there and see those guys, and they'll get you hooked up.
Yep. One of the other things that they've got going right now is those Sodak boxes that were ever so popular through the wintertime. They've got open water Sodak boxes. So get in there. Maybe Matt and I will get in there at some point in time. Maybe there'll be some Sodak boxes on the line for the spring cleanup. And yeah, that's right. We'll talk about that here in a second. But no, either way, stop in there to Dakota Angler there on the north side of Sioux Falls. If you can't, go to www.dakotaangler.com and use code DIRTBAG at checkout. Save yourself a little extra jangle in that pocket.
Definitely.
And yeah, just stretch that dollar. So spring shoreline cleanup. We've actually gotten our first people that have sent in some pictures. We have not made a Facebook post yet. Weather is nice. After all this wind, I know that there's going to be a lot of garbage down there by the river that blew around the other day. So hopefully, Matt, you and I can get out here, you know, in the next few days, get some stuff picked up. We will make a Facebook post, and after that, you can post your pictures on that. As far as the Ostra family that has already sent me some pictures, I'll talk to you, you know, whether or not you guys want to repost your pictures on that post or whatever, but we appreciate you getting out there, picking up some trash along the shoreline, and making those resources better for everyone.
Yep.
It's not just for the person picking them up. It's everyone.
A little goes a long ways.
That's right. And we've talked about it before. You don't have to go out and pick up, you know, a whole entire garbage barrel full. Go out with one grocery bag. If you pick up three bottles and some old wrapper, one bottle and some old wrapper, you know, if you make any sort of effort in picking something up, we're going to throw your name in the hat. Our buddy Rod Wotan has already donated a trout trip over in the Driftless region of northeast Iowa.
Yeah.
So if you if you're the lucky winner of that, you get to go fishing with Rod. Matt and I just said we're going to sweeten that up. We're going to throw in some Dakota Angler Sodak boxes. Yeah, everyone's a winner in this one.
Yep, get out there and be some dirt bags and pick up some trash.
That's
get
right.
A little dirty.
That's right. As promised here a couple weeks ago, we talked that we were going to have a Wisconsin DNR officer on the show. Tonight's that night, or today's that day, or this morning's this that morning.
Yeah.
Depends on when you're listening.
That's right.
But for us right now, recording, it's evening, nighttime. And we've got Mike Burns on the show. Mike is, conservation officer over there in Wisconsin. And, we're pretty excited. This is one of those, you know, we've had fisheries biologists. We've had some different stuff, but we've never had a warden on.
No, I think all of us probably that's listening, stuff like that, have been fortunate enough to talk to one
right.
Before maybe
yep.
Maybe he's interviewed us about some things or yeah. Something like that, so I guess this is kind of our opportunity to
we
throw
interview
some questions, some put him in the hot seat a little bit,
kind of like on Step Brothers when they
right.
Talk about, you know, how about we interview you, how much do you make a year before taxes? All right, enough with that. Let's get over to Mike. And we're here today with Mike Burns, conservation warden with the Wisconsin DNR. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous. It's great to speak with you guys. Really happy to be here.
Awesome. Now, you know, I called you a conservation warden there. I've heard conservation officer. I've heard game warden. What's the proper title?
Yeah, so you had it right on, conservation warden.
Depending on
if you guys operate like in the state of Minnesota, it'd be conservation officer. I believe Illinois would be something similar. Michigan might be something different. In a sense, we're often referred to as game wardens. And yesteryear, I think we held that title, but now we have a little more sophisticated title in conservation warden to speak a little bit more holistically is what we do.
Yeah, definitely. That's my style. Anyways. Mike, Matt and I always like to get these shows started off before we dive into the fishing part or the conservation warden part. We like to bring up a couple of random questions. So I want to know if you're going out to eat and going to get some chicken wings, what you getting, barbecue or buffalo? What flavor are you getting?
I'm a traditionalist in that I'll probably reach for the barbecue.
Okay.
I'm not crazy about hot food, but there's a certain satisfaction with a barbecue chicken wing that goes down pretty easy on a Friday night.
That's right.
Oh, that's for sure.
You going traditional wings or boneless?
You know, I will go traditional and flats versus drums. I know there's some guys that would prefer one or the other. I'm a flat guy versus a drum. If I had to choose.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you going ranch, blue cheese, or nothing?
I might just take a naked wing with barbecue sauce.
There you go.
You are going to fit in right perfect around here.
All right.
Yeah, we knew you weren't old enough for blue cheese.
Right.
We've decided on here that you got to be at least 60 years old for blue cheese unless you're Oiler. And that's good. That's good.
I guess my random question for you is, I mean, you get to spend a lot of time in a truck driving around, so you probably get to listen to a few tunes out there. What's your karaoke song?
Ooh.
Oh, boy. Oh. You know, I'm not a big music listener. I dabble in podcasts. When I got time behind the wheel, I tend to be listening to podcasts about everywhere I go, in addition to listening to police radio and things like that. But karaoke, man, I don't know. I'd be awfully embarrassed of myself if you were to hear me sing or anybody were to hear me sing.
Well, there's no judging here because we don't fancy ourselves as singers either, but you know, everybody's got that one song that they're not afraid to belt out sometimes, whether you're alone or you're in front of a bunch of people.
Oh, all right. All right, it came to me now, guys. It'd be a Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And nothing like, you know, I picture Wayne's World when I picture guys just singing in the car to some Bohemian Rhapsody. So that kind of imagery is flowing back into my head now.
Yeah, and that's a great song to sing to because you don't have to sing very well to sing that song. You just can do the actions from Wayne's World and everybody's like, oh, yeah. I mean, it takes them right there to it.
The best part is you don't even probably know the words. You don't exactly know what you're saying. You just kind of make it sound halfway right.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So obviously we already dipped into it, but conservation warden, where exactly are you located there?
Yeah. So here in Wisconsin, I'm located in Iowa County. And unlike what you might think, we don't actually touch Iowa County. We're a county removed. The best way to probably describe it would be about 30 minutes west of Madison, but off of the Mississippi a little bit. So down here in the Driftless area of Wisconsin, Iowa County is the home station for me.
And is that where you grew up?
So I originally grew up in the La Crosse area. So I was fortunate to be able to stay in the Driftless area. Of course, that's mostly the legendary Buffalo County and south there, down through the Mississippi Valley. So I grew up in the La Crosse area and was fortunate to be stationed in the Driftless area in Lafayette County, which is a county just south of here, and now Iowa County for the last, going on 5 years now.
Cool.
Nice.
Now, was the outdoors always a big part of your life?
Yeah, certainly. Growing up in the La Crosse area and having access to the Mississippi River, abundant ducks, fishing, deer hunting, very, very avid outdoorsmen where I was getting, at an early age, towing along with family at the age of, 10 before you had to be 12 to hunt back then.
Yep.
Just being a dog in deer drives, pushing deer, just being with the guys in a traditional deer camp. I don't know, just really reminiscing now as I'm older is the kind of the glory years of, just having the guys together, shooting the breeze and all enjoying the shared experiences of hunting and fishing.
Right on. Now, like being a conservation warden, was that something that you always kind of like as a kid kind of like had hopes and aspirations to do? Or was that something that kind of like through your high school years or something like that, where it just kind of like that's something like a path I'd like to go down?
Yeah. And a little bit of both. It certainly played in the back of my mind throughout the childhood years as you're going to high school, thinking about college, and at that time it got to be a little bit more popular. We started to see some of the TV shows and things like that. shedding a spotlight on the career. So it was in the back of my head as growing up. Of course, the passion for the outdoors certainly played into that. And through my college years, it got to be a little bit more attainable, where this is the process that you'd have to set yourself up for success. And then following that process through is kind of a long-winded way to say, and yes, it was in the back of my mind, and then it just slowly built throughout my life.
Now, did you go to college for a wildlife and fisheries degree, or did you go for a law enforcement degree, or how did you end up there?
And the answer is yes. All of the above. Yeah, I was fortunate to go to the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, which has a tremendous natural resource college. And the major that I had majored in was resource management and environmental law enforcement. So it kind of tickled both taste buds there of the wildlife and fishery side, in addition to the law enforcement element. And, you know, if you were to rename that degree, it'd certainly be the conservation warden or game warden degree. Looking at it from afar, so it and that really reassured me I was in the right place.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we've had some kids that I went to school with that ended up at South Dakota State University for the wildlife and fisheries program, in hopes that they would turn around and become a game warden. And, mm-hmm. There's not a ton of game warden, jobs out there, like for us in the state of Iowa, some of our game wardens, cover 2 counties, 3 counties. And, I believe we've got 99 counties, total.
Yes.
So, when you're going through school, I'm sure it was your thought that you wanted to stay there in Wisconsin.
Yeah. And like you spoke to, it's the odds, looking at the odds in general, very long odds. I mean, it's a prestigious career. You really have to stand out amongst an otherwise crowded application field when you go into the game warden or conservation warden profession. So having a backup plan was important to me, where I was perfectly content working maybe traditional law enforcement for a few years, or, getting your foot in the door with a particular state agency certainly in the back of my mind as a backup plan. I wouldn't say it's very common that we would hire somebody right out of college. However, it does happen. But for me, it was, looking at very rough odds in that time, the economy, we were coming out of the recession where it was going to be a long shot. And having a backup plan and realistic approach to it, I think it did help me. And it didn't come easy. I certainly wasn't one that got hired right out of college, and I had to put your time in. Looking back at it now, a great experience, life experience, to be able to lead up to that ultimate goal of getting hired.
And now, one of the things that I do want to touch on, because I actually know one of the wardens that's right in your area, Ben Gruber.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ben did not go to college to be a, and I guess maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he did, but Ben was actually a firefighter before he became a conservation warden. So, there is some untraditional approaches into that career.
100%. And anymore, life experience really speaks to, if you're a outdoorsman or out on the water all the time, there's value in that. And I think moreover, we've seen people that come in with a diverse life experience, whether it's a paramedic fireman career, whether it's, just building construction or marketing or traditional business or other government jobs, there's value there. And life lessons that you've learned, that are really applicable to this job, persistence, handling multiple tasks at the same time, being responsible to your community, really speaking to characteristics rather than something that you could maybe learn in the classroom environment. So, we have many people that have come from non-traditional paths to arrive at the conservation warden career, and they're absolutely phenomenal at it.
Oh, that's very cool. Now, how long have you been doing this? I know you said right coming out of the recession, 5-6 years?
Yeah, so I'd started with the department in 2014, working part-time as a deputy conservation warden at that time, where mostly we were hired on for seasonal help with the summer influx of people doing, on vacation and things like that. So I'd worked part-time for the department in 2014-15, And then after that, I had actually worked for the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, which is the tribal agency that co-manages the ceded territory, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota, before coming right on back to Wisconsin in 2018.
Okay. Nice. Now, what is an average day? And, you know, that's probably one of those terms that just doesn't even make sense with your career, because I doubt there is an average day. But just take us through a couple days in the life of a conservation warden. You know, I'm sure it's not all writing tickets for over-harvesting of walleyes. It's not all shooting bucks out of season. There's got to be some wild stuff that goes into to an average day.
Yeah, absolutely. So we try to manage our time, and of course, because we manage a county, we have a pretty good handle on not only the public lands, the resources available, and the timeliness of it all. And the timeliness speaks to, of course, season structures, bag limits, wildlife, and fish behavior. So on a, you know, spring day like it would be today, knowing that the walleyes are going to be running below the dams on the Mississippi River, where if I needed to go travel a ways to work fishing enforcement on the Mississippi, I'm certainly available to do that. But trying to manage fiscally our time spent and leveraging that against the resource itself. So I guess on a day like today, if it's a nice day, I may work fishing enforcement early on and then slowly transition to, you know, maybe some state park or property work. And at any point in between there, the radio could squawk and you're off doing something entirely different or helping a county deputy.
Right. Now, like, as you guys, as our turkey season started up here yesterday, as you guys' turkey season started up, or is it coming out down the road here?
Yeah, it'll be coming up here shortly with our youth hunt. I believe it is this weekend. The 13th would be the youth hunt, and then our first turkey season for most folks would be the 17th. So yeah, turkeys are fired up, and we'll have some turkey hunters in the woods here shortly.
What are your hours, like your daily hours? Like, what time do you usually, you know, clock in, so to say, and then, you know, when is the average day done?
Great question, and I don't have a solid answer just because we're fortunate in that when I turn the key to start the truck is when I start my day.
Right.
We have take-home squads, so really fortunate there, and we have the flexibility from our supervisors to know the area and manage it appropriate how we see fit. So I often tease there's a healthy amount of paranoia in any conservation warden where we like to vary our schedules and not be predictable.
Right. Yep. Oh, yeah.
I share in that healthy paranoia. It sounds like an oxymoron, but so I like to vary my schedule up and, you know, work evenings or work early mornings. Just doing different things all the time because you never know what you're missing. If you're working banker hours.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to, like you said, you got to keep people guessing, but you also, like, I suppose it all depends on the time of the year and what type of things are going on and everything like that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. But in most part, we'll work an 8-hour day like most folks, but it's going to vary depending on the task or what the resource demands are.
Right.
Now, Mike, you've been doing this, you said, you know, since 2014 or somewhere around then. What, you've got to have some pretty wild stories, some wild calls getting called out to, some wonky things. You got one or two that just really stick out in your mind that it's like, holy moly, that was wild.
Yeah. Certainly one comes to mind. I just wrapped up, a deer case here a couple of years ago working with a fellow warden of mine, Kyle Halverson. And we had received a complaint on a particular gentleman that we had history with. Not me particular, but he had history with the department in the sense that shining shooting deer was what he did. He happened to be a felon. So really interesting when you get somebody who's been through the system like that. And down here in the southwest part of the state, we are known for just absolutely stomper deer.
Right.
They're not to say that they're abundant. However, like 180-inch deer, there'll be several killed in the county every single year, and it attracts a lot of attention. So we had received an anonymous tip, like we often do, like most cases start with this gentleman that I didn't have any knowledge of, but looking into it, wardens that had retired, come and gone, had dealt with this individual. And like I said, spoke to a violent past or a felonious past, and we had reached out to the complainants and gotten some, well, it wasn't great information. Oftentimes with complainants, I'm not willing to give up somebody's information. I hold that pretty tight to the vest. And if it means I don't make a case, well, I don't make a case. I'm not going to burn informants or anything like that. So we had gotten to the point where, you know, our informants weren't willing to testify, and it puts us in a really tough pickle where, you know, oftentimes we either have to just go interview the individual with what we have. In this instance, it was that he had already shot a buck that particular year and was continuing to hunt, not filling tags, not having licenses, but very little to go off of, where if we were to sit down with somebody who's been through the ringer once before, yeah, it can be difficult. And so Kyle and I had sat on this enough and talked it over, and well, we were just going to go interview the guy. And on the way there to go interview this gentleman, we'd gotten a call for a lost pheasant hunter in one of our state properties, and it was after dark, got sidetracked looking for 3 or 4 hours to this particular gentleman, ended up finding him, and he was safe, of course, and went home. But we found ourselves so late at night where we weren't possibly going to interview this individual that afternoon, and we were just going to call off the night and just go home. So, and it was probably about 9-10 o'clock at that time. So we had called it a night and gone to bed, slept in a little bit since we had such a late night, and I am greeted to this individual that we were about to talk to and his smiling mug, just with a grip and grin of about 180-inch buck on social media. I was like, yeah. Oh, baby. Yeah, which would be his second deer at that point. That was our entry point in. So I immediately had called Kyle, and we were going to act on this one and run right on down there and interview him now that we have something a little bit more of substance. And so we'd end up going down to his house, and unfortunately his partner had answered the door, and he wasn't home at that point. And so kind of the gig was up, and I had talked with I think it might've been a girlfriend or something, trying to just probe, get any information I could. Cause the last thing you want is somebody just slamming the door. They're tipped off. Yeah. This deer, you're never going to see this deer again. All these thoughts are going through your head. Like, you just got burned. And certainly both of us were kicking the dirt at that point. Just dejected that was our opportunity. Now he knows we're looking for him. And it's going to be just exponentially harder. So we had more or less pulled down the road, sat on the road for hours and hours, and he wasn't coming home that night. So eventually we had called it that night. And so now we're a couple days in, and what we have so far is we're suspecting that this is, of course, his second deer. Good information that this would be his second deer with archery equipment, and a large deer at that. So the gig was up. He knew we were there. And so we had called and arranged a time to meet up. And in the meantime, we had drafted three different search warrants, which is often a tactic if we have enough probable cause to draft search warrants for residences, properties, things like that, is we'll take that opportunity, knowing that we have probable cause of several crimes in this instance. So we'd actually drafted three search warrants, one for his house, one for his mom's house, and then one for the remote property that we knew they had just bought, and I believe they were remodeling. So the plan was to, of course, try to interview him, knowing that we were going to serve three search warrants simultaneously at three different properties, thinking if he was going to stash things, they're probably not going to be at his house. They're going to be at some other place. And so we did that. We'd interviewed him. He wasn't giving us a whole lot. Of course, when you're the point where you're a felon, shining shooting deer is the norm. You're not going to give up a whole lot of information to the wardens. So we didn't really get a whole lot. However, when we had served the warrants, you could just see the blood in his face absolutely drain. And it wasn't the fact that we were serving a warrant in his house. What really hurt was I could tell as we're individually laying them on the table of, all right, and here's your mother's house, knowing that you reside and stay there oftentimes. And then here's this remote property. And that you could tell we hit a nerve there.
Yeah.
And so I was very interested to find out, not what was in the house, because he had a couple of days to clean out the house or try to look on the up and up if he knew we were coming. And the really key to knowing we were on the right path was going to this other remote property and finding the head and a cape of like 140, 150 inch deer in the upstairs of a barn, essentially. So it was ripped down to the studs and just absolutely out of place. Here's a trash bag and 150 inch buck in the upstairs of a building. It has no place there, and it's still frozen.
That's not where you keep your bucks.
Exactly.
You should see the roof in my barn.
Yeah, cape and everything attached, yeah. Still frozen. So just hours earlier, he had pulled it out of a freezer and in panic mode, moving stuff around. And then just to reaffirm that was a $2,000 crossbow in a stashed up against the wall of a machine shed. So we knew we were on the right track there, and that felt really good because we ended up with I think 7 or 8 deer, and we only knew about 2 in the long run once he had gone through and collected all the data and referred charges where he's eventually held accountable for a felony charge for felony possession of a firearm in addition to several deer crimes, which amounted to 60 days in jail, I think $12,000 in fines, and then revocation for 15 years. So it just a really culmination of a lot of different people helping with a case like that in that kind of volume. It's not very often where you encounter a situation with those particular dynamics, but when a lot of people helped out with that one, and rightfully so. I feel like had a really good conclusion to that, and people in the community really thanked us for that one because they knew this was going on for years and years. And
right, yeah.
It really doesn't come as a surprise when you start talking with neighbors and things when you're serving search warrants and they're kind of nosing around wondering what's going on. It doesn't come as a surprise to a lot of these people. So that one was good. And certainly a lot of people helped with that one to see it through to the end.
Now you mentioned seeing this picture on social media.
Yeah, what I was going
to
bring up.
We've talked to our local game warden here quite often. We, you know, run into him a lot. He lives in town, and we all, you know, chat quite a bit. And he says, like, how big of a tool is that for you guys, social media? Because people, like, are dumb enough to post a lot of illegal activities on there when it comes down to hunting and fishing. How huge of a tool is that for you guys?
Yeah, it can be good. And I don't really generally go looking for stuff on social media. Oftentimes
right.
It's somebody that'll screenshot it and send it to us.
Right, yeah.
Like a look at this. I stay plenty busy with those. So it's an incredible good tool because you can establish a date. Oftentimes there's some kind of comment as far as where or when it might have been shot. So I've made quite a few cases now on social media or it's definitely something that you have to lean into being the 21st century conservation warden where it's getting to be quite a bit more common. And if you're looking to turn over every rock, you better turn that one over.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Now, did you have another story or was that, I know I asked you if you had any stories. I didn't know if you had another one on top of that. I don't want to move on if you've got another cool story.
Oh, I can speak to just maybe something short and simple. Yep. Oftentimes, our division here at the Wisconsin DNR is Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection. So first off, it speaks to the public safety element of it. And of course, that is the obvious priority if you're leveraging public safety versus natural resources. So what we do in a lot of our profession is related to public safety in the same way where deputies or police officers would be. So when it comes to 1.5 million acres of public land, we're the full police authority on those 1.5 million acres of DNR lands that we own. So any crime or anything committed on those lands, we have the full authority of state statute to investigate it. And in this instance, I was working OWI enforcement, you know, much like a county deputy or police officer would be, and OWI meaning operating while intoxicated. Alcohol is a problem. Drinking and driving is a problem in Wisconsin. And so while working our state properties, oftentimes I'll take on the duties of something traditional and just work speed enforcement. And this particular property had made a traffic stop on an individual. He's going 52 and a 25 or something. Rather extreme speeding, where I had pulled him over and he had parked right in the middle of a frontage road in and amongst a parking lot, just a really terrible place to park. And made contact with him, relatively obvious that he was very much intoxicated. And immediately, right off the gate, I could, and this is a small Honda coupe, really, really tiny car. He gets out, there was a language barrier there. And so trying to explain field sobriety to somebody who doesn't speak English can be a rather laborious task.
I believe that.
Yeah, when you're talking about keep your head still or, you know, lift up this leg, take a few steps here. I'm not very well versed in my ability to speak Spanish, but I know enough to kind of communicate the basics. So this individual, I'd pulled him out of the car, was running field sobriety, explaining the test. And while doing, you know, looking at his eyes for the horizontal gaze or horizontal gaze nystagmus, essentially just an involuntary jerking of the eyes. And I'm doing this, and we're probably 45 seconds, a minute into, you know, me explaining all these things, maybe even 2 minutes. And all of a sudden I hear just a commotion erupting from the beach. I'm like, what the heck is that? I look over there, and this guy's car is just rolling away from me towards the beach, and kind of confronted with the, oh, dang, stay here, and having to run after this individual's car because he had forgot to put it in park.
Yeah.
So here I am having to just run alongside this Honda coupe that is just absolutely tiny. And when you get the amount of gear that we wear, it's very, very hard to maneuver, run. All those things get a little bit more laborious and difficult to do. So here I am running along this car, trying to get into it before it's going to run right down into a crowded beach area that we have on one of our state properties amongst a lake. And fortunately, I was able to kind of, well, not Dukes of Hazzard-ish. That'd be across the hood. But position myself where I could jump into the driver's seat, put on the brake, put it in park, feel comfortable that that was not going to move any further, and then return to run the individual through the full battery of field sobriety tests and eventually arrest them. But the really interesting part of this case is when it came down to getting a blood draw warrant, which is just evidence to prove operating while intoxicated, we have to take sworn testimony as far as what our observations were. And generally, this would take the shape of, well, this individual deviated left of center or was speeding, and I observed the smell of alcohol. They failed this test. They had these many clues. And of course, this individual had all those. But when speaking with the judge, I'd gotten to say that, well, the individual had failed to put the vehicle in park. The vehicle rolled towards the beach. I had to chase after the vehicle, slam on the brakes, and put the vehicle in park. And I swear to this day that there was a chuckle where I could tell that the judge enjoyed that one a little bit. We're just speaking to the whole story. It just added a little bit more added flair to what would otherwise be a mundane contact.
Now, are all the people on the beach watching this happen?
Absolutely.
Please tell me that they gave you a standing ovation when you got in there and got in the park.
There's definitely some cheers.
Yes.
But at that point, my heart rate's elevated. I'm just trying to calm everything down, go back to normal, see through the investigation. So you're absolutely right. And it was just kind of pandemonium for a while there.
I suppose we could jump on social media and type in Wisconsin conservation warden stops car from rolling in.
It's on TikTok.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Now, one of the other things that I wanted to talk to you about regarding Conservation Warden, and something that I think a lot of people kind of fail to realize is an option, is contacting a conservation warden if you are traveling to that area. You know, Matt and I are obviously here in Northwest Iowa. You're over there in Wisconsin. A tool that we could use if we were traveling over there to Wisconsin is to call you and say, hey, we're, you know, going to be heading that way on a turkey trip. And you know, not that you're going to do the scouting for us, but, you know, I guess maybe we should run it more into fishing, since this is a fishing podcast. But, you know, you are willing to help people, get them in the right direction. You know, hey, this lake has been doing pretty good these last few years. You know, I've seen a lot of people out here. You know, they're having luck. That's one of the tools that we have at our disposal, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We're available to the public, whether that's residents or non-residents. And we want to highlight the resources within our state, right? I mean, that's why we all got into this profession, is to regulate something that we're already interested in. So I field not a terrible whole lot of calls each year regarding people wanting to come to the area. And at that point, like you said, oftentimes there's some homework associated where the individual coming is, I want to fish for walleyes and I'm going to be here, where, oh, that's a great jumping off point for, well, this landing might be closed due to maintenance, right, or, you know, they're on the wing dams, this bait's been really hot. I'm happy to provide that information. I'm not going to give you GPS coordinates, but it should lead you in the right direction, where hopefully it would save someone hours of having to figure it out the hard way and wasting their time, because I want people to have a good time and highlight the resources available in my area. So I'm happy to be an open book, speak to the customer service element of the resource. And I generally are fairly open with information, where if somebody were to share a GPS point with me and I have knowledge of that area, I'll tell you exactly the information that I happen to know about the area.
Yep. And I guess there too, you know, that's not just fishing and hunting, but say you want to go hiking or anything like that. You know, you're anything to do with the outdoors.
Correct. Yeah. We can speak to most DNR managed lands and or public lands, whether it's held with the federal government. We find ourselves on public land very, very often. But yeah, I mean, if you're into some of the non-consumptive things like just hiking, or where's a good camping spot, happy to direct people to the right locations to fit their needs.
Yeah. Cool.
Now, you know, something I want to ask you is, like, how busy are you, like, during deer season over there? Because don't they say it's like the population of Wisconsin is just like the amount of deer hunters over there for opener is crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. I know in the past, I'd have to look up the metrics. It used to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 deer were harvested in the first 2 days. It's just an astronomical number. And rightfully so, there's, I think we're 400,000-ish hunters participating within that 9-day stretch. So it's busy. And often, I may not work every day, but I'll be putting in 10-hour days, 12-hour days, depending on what's going on, relatively consistently, because it is so many people. And quite frankly, it's worth our time to work a few extra hours, knowing that just in a few days, you know, it's people slowly leave. Workflow slows down a little bit. So oftentimes for like an opening weekend, I'll have a handful of people that I already have on my list to want to talk to, whether it's with bait, with illegal tree stands, with all kinds of other licensing issues, where I'll try to contact them the first couple of days, where the first 2 days are incredibly busy. And then, well, even tailing into the Thanksgiving holiday gets to be fairly busy as well.
Now, I guess we'll roll this into a couple of the myths that go into conservation wardens. Now, you talked about working a lot there during the deer season. You, as a conservation warden, do you get to do any deer hunting?
Yeah, and this is probably the number one myth around the warden career. And the answer is absolutely yes. So having that, we have that flexibility in the schedule to, you know, decide whether we want to work evenings, work mornings. Say you have a particular complaint where somebody's shining and shooting deer all the way into 1-2 in the morning. Well, you're just going to deviate your work schedule to work that evening complaint, which would then free up your morning schedule, or for that matter, mid-afternoon schedule, to be able to get out in the tree stand yourself and do some hunting. So the wardens that we have some absolutely incredible hunters that we know our areas. Some hunt on public land, some private land. But for me personally, I caught the western bug really bad, where I'll go elk hunting, mule deer, antelope, and bison, oryx. I had an ibex tag. I shot a audad last spring. So we have all kinds of flexibility to really take time off away, and I like to do it on the shoulder seasons or timing when Wisconsin isn't hot and heavy. Things.
Now, is there any other myths that you get asked about a lot, and it's like, no, that's not real?
Part of it maybe speaks to the background that you had talked to of, well, if I've got a speeding ticket, I can't be a warden. Or if I got, particular underage drinking ticket when I was 20 years old in college, well, I'm automatically out. Not at all the case. It really speaks to, and throughout our background process or hiring process, it speaks to life experience. If you've gotten or made some bad choices 15 years ago, I would argue that most people are different people now than they were back then. So oftentimes people write themselves off or are kind of kicking the dirt, writing it off as a career possibility. And that's just not the case. It really is open to everybody. And when you get thinking of your life experience, it's just communicating your story to the applicable characteristics of being honest, hardworking, self-starter, motivated person that, being a conservation warden really demands.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Is there any jobs open right now in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we'll open our hiring process here on the 11th, actually. We're looking to hire about 20 wardens for the, what would be the 2025 recruit class, meaning your start date would be January of 2025. But of course, we have a fairly lengthy process and checks and balances where the initial applications will be taken April 11th through May 7th. And if people want more information, they can visit Wisconsin DNR's website, search warden recruitment, and they have all kinds of additional resources, including pay, benefits, the qualifications. But just quickly, some of the qualifications would be that you just have to be 21 years of age. Of course, no felonies, because you have to possess a firearm, have a valid driver's license, and pass our entrance fitness test. There's some nominal things that I didn't include there, but generally those are the pillars that people have to hold up to be able to put their name in the hat and roll the dice and maybe be selected to be one of the 20 conservation wardens that we're looking to hire here in the 2025 class.
Are you guys expanding that much that you're hiring 20 or expanding into more wardens than what you traditionally have had? Or do you have a lot of retirements? Or, 20 seems like a big number.
Yeah, so we've had about 20 the last couple of years. A lot of that has to do with retirements. We're certainly not adding any positions. I think we're going the other direction.
Yeah, I'm afraid that happens a lot.
Yeah, with funding challenges and things, we're trying to provide the most value to our customers that we possibly can with the budget we're allowed. So the 20 would come from a lot of retirements. It is one of those vocations where wardens, we are afforded the ability to retire at 53 with a full state pension. If you have 25 years of service to pursue a second job, or second life passion for that matter, if you're off the books at 53. So really appealing where... it's very hard work, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that if you put in your time, be available, you know, an early retirement at 53 is a great privilege that we have at this time.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's very cool. Very cool.
Now, is there any, like, fishing cases that you've had where, like, somebody's just had just a crazy number over the bag limit?
I've had a few, I've helped with a few more, where it's been approaching that 1,000, and generally it comes from the body, the fish factories, like your Mississippi or Lake Michigan, Green Bay, Lake Superior, some of these inland lakes, can amount to panfish and people holding over 1,000 fish, but, where I'm at, it's a lot of trout water and things, and, really doesn't speak to just the volume that these bigger water bodies can provide. But I've helped out a few when you're counting hundreds of fish and or approaching 1,000 fish.
Yeah, that's a couple.
Yeah, that's a few over.
It's when you look in their trunk and it's like, yeah, I don't think I got to do any counting. We're over.
Yeah. Yeah, and oftentimes it's a result of a large investigation. Search warrants were executed, multiple chest freezers. There may be a commercial element to it where they're selling fish on the side or going crossing state lines to sell fish. Often there's a criminal element to it as well.
No, that's crazy. Yeah. No, unless you've got anything else that you really want to dive into, Mike, you know, we appreciate your time, you know, getting to be a little bit later in the evening, and I'm sure you got to go again tomorrow morning. But, yeah, unless there's something else you want to dive into, we can cap it off there.
No, I really appreciate your time. It's a great conversation speaking with you. And again, if people want more information, they can visit about the Warden Conservation Warden Service here in Wisconsin. You can visit Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources website, search Warden Recruitment. And as you're listening to it now, our hiring announcement will be live. So I'd love for your listenership to check that out. And if it really appeals to them, throw their name in the hat, go through the process, and maybe someday be a conservation warden here in Wisconsin.
That'd be awesome. That'd be way cool. So, all right, Mike, we appreciate it, and we're glad we had you on.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Hey, take care.
You too.
Bye.
And that was Mike Burns with the Wisconsin DNR.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. He was very well spoken. Had a couple cool stories there, and it was just interesting for us to kind of chat with somebody that, you know, isn't a fishing guide or tournament angler or something. You know, just, you know, I honestly, like, we talked very little about fishing all the way through that interview, but it was neat to hear what he had to say.
And it all still relates back to it. And you know, I think with the popularity, I think wardens, like, the whole career has gotten a little bit popular the last few years with all those TV shows now that are out about, you know, out in Maine, New Hampshire, the ones out in Montana and Wyoming and stuff like that. So, I mean, it kind of, you get to see, like, what you were saying there. There's more to it than just, like, the hunting and fishing side of it. I mean, you could be, I mean, getting called.
Finding a lost pheasant hunter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You see that a lot where they're up there finding lost hikers, things like that. Or, you know, somebody has a, in town, all of a sudden, you know, a raccoon is wandering around in town. And it's just like they usually get called. I mean, because most places these guys are at are rural communities, so there is no, like, animal control or anything like that. Right. So then those guys kind of become that. And you just never know what's going to, every time that phone rings, what you're going to get called to. And, I mean, there's got to be a lot of fun, rewarding parts to it, too. It's not just going out there. I think one of the myths probably should have asked him about is, like, you're just always out there handing tickets out, and you're, like, looking for, like, violations and stuff, and they're not. I mean, they're out there. They're just, it's nice to see them. I think that we've always right. talked about it before. I mean, nobody should ever, I never get the people that get upset when they get checked by them.
No, no, no. They're protecting the resource that all of us are out there,
right.
you know, trying to enjoy. And as long as you're following the law, you guess, you know, really, truly, you got nothing to worry about.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, you should be all calm and cool and collective. And just, I mean, a lot of those guys just like to hear stories just like what we do.
Yeah, they're just regular outdoorsmen that, yep. that want to BS about hunting and fishing. So, nope, that was cool. That was cool. So, Bassmaster Elite Series tournament this weekend.
Yeah,
so if you are in the Bassmaster Fantasy Fishing with us, get your lineup set.
Before Thursday morning, early Thursday morning.
That's right. So otherwise, I don't know that we really have a ton to talk about as far as housekeeping stuff. Yeah, if there is, I apologize. I forgot about it, whatever. But yeah, we'll move right on into Freedom Brew Good News Stories of the Week. Freedom Brew over there in Larchwood, Iowa. Our friends Austin and Brianna make the absolute best coffee that there is. And it's not just coffee. They've got a little something for everyone. They've got pastries and all different yep. sorts of stuff in the mornings. They've got ice cream. They've got Lotus energy drinks.
Yeah, it's your one-stop shop.
That's right. That's right. So it doesn't matter where you're at. I highly recommend you get over there. And even if you're Kyle Lynn up right in the heart of Minneapolis, right down the road from our buddy Scott Mockentune, if you're waking up on the weekend, drive down to Freedom Brew.
Right. If you can avoid, like, I mean, rush hour. I mean, it's going to be a 3.5-hour trip no matter what, whether you're sitting in traffic and moving 10 feet or you're seeing some beautiful country down here and getting yourself a Freedom Brew.
Exactly. Exactly. Think about it.
Yep.
You don't got to think that
no,
hard.
No, just drive.
Figure out what the better way to go is. So, yeah, Freedom Brew. My good news story, I know I kind of covered it last week with the success of the female athlete here in the state of Iowa. Obviously, the Iowa women's basketball team came up a little bit short against South Carolina. But either way, I still want to just give them one last shout out. They made the national title game 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And I don't care, you know, if you're a Nebraska Cornhusker fan or if you're a Minnesota Gophers fan or whatever you are. Oh, I guess I was going to say, you know, you truly got to realize how special it is to be making national title games. Like I as an Iowa Hawkeye fan may never see another Iowa Hawkeye team compete for a national title. And, you know, obviously North Dakota State and South Dakota State, you know, the football teams, they might be competing for another national title here coming down the pipe. Both of them, you know, storied programs, kind of there every single year, whatever. But, you know, I mean, as an Iowa Hawkeye fan, I don't see our football team competing for a national title anytime soon. The women's basketball team could still be a good, solid team next year, but they're not competing for another national No. title. Our men's team isn't competing for another national title. We kind of seem to be on the downward trend when it comes to Iowa wrestling. You know, that could be it for national titles and
you got to enjoy it while it happens.
Yep. You know, you do it 2 years in a row and you just kind of get into that funk that you maybe forget how special it truly is. But, yeah, don't forget that.
Yeah. It's, you know, how lucky are we to have Lisa Bluder as the head coach?
What a classy lady.
I mean, that speech that she gave like afterwards to the team, like in the locker room when she's talking about the seniors. I mean, it's just pure class. And I mean, anybody yep. that's ever coached anything, like, that's probably the hardest speech a coach ever has to give is at the end of the season. Whether you go out on top or, you know, you lose the title game and stuff like that, to sit up there in front of those guys, you know, she sat up there in front of those ladies and, you know, you're thanking them for all their years of dedication and hard work. I mean, especially this day and age, a lot of those ladies could have jumped in the portal and went somewhere else and played. And, you know, they stuck it out and they trusted her and she trusted them. So, I guess my good news story is, you know, we just get done talking to Mike there in the conservation field and stuff like that. I'm going to give a shout out to my cousin Taylor. She is a conservation officer in the state of South Dakota. She kind of works in the area south of Sioux Falls and stuff like that. And, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, she never did a lot of hunting and fishing growing up. I mean, she was around it. She did a lot of trapping with her dad.
Yeah,
she did some, like, deer hunting and everything. But she always had a passion for the outdoors. So, like Mike said there, it doesn't always have to be, like, the traditional, like, path where you grew up in it. I mean, if you have interest in it, you can get involved. And it's not just, I know it's a male dominated field, but to any of our female listeners or anybody like that, or maybe you have a daughter or a niece or a friend that has children that have thought about it, you know, tell them never be afraid to reach out and go for those goals. You know, maybe talk to one of the female conservation officers and kind of see what their path is. And I know that they're really trying to get, you know, the ladies involved with that. And I mean, I know there was a lot of places that reached out to her when she was graduating that they wanted her to come there because they need more ladies in the field. So don't just think it's just a male dominated or a male for the males and stuff like that. So I'm just going to give a shout out to Taylor for all her hard work and getting to where she is.
Yeah, heck yeah. So, all right. I believe that we'll put a bow on episode 261. We appreciate every single one of you guys. Maybe next week we might circle around and try to get Adam Rasmussen on. You know, we had him scheduled here 2 weeks ago, last week, whatever it was. Maybe we'll circle around to him. I guess it all depends on what happens in the Midwest fishing world here over the next week. And what next week looks like for Matt and I. But either way, we appreciate every single one of you guys. And we'll see you next week on episode 262. Later.